Bam, 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 bam,
welcome to Yellow Gastus and Honoraries. Again, we have my very musical host, co-host Michael Pontone, and I'm Matthew Ross. This is episode 5. We're looking at Star Trek's The Enemy Within. How are we doing tonight, Mike? Thought that we could connect without some of the technical difficulties.
We're doing good. I regret that I am the reason why we were delayed. I'm sure about one or two of our listeners were like, where's the weekly episode?
But well, you know, but we've gotten the road. But here we are. We had to deal with our own enemies within. This is actually another one of my favorites. And I'm going to say like another one of my favorites. That's not exactly true. But this is actually a tour de force of pure William Shatner being twice the man he is as he split apart Jekyll and Hyde style in this interesting episode. It's one of the ones I enjoyed. And since you haven't seen this really a good further before, what are your general impressions? Did you enjoy this episode?
I loved it. I thought that it was a fantastic little slice of good old classic Trek. Yes, I was supremely impressed. And it was a better written episode than a lot of TNG episodes, but a very TNG conceit.
It is interesting that it was the splitting of a part. The actual writer, Richard Matheson, said that he wanted to do something like Jekyll and Hyde, and I think he captured it well. We start off on the planet Alpha Run 77. They're doing some sort of geological survey. Send Yutz, geological technician Fisher, falls down and yellow dust when they beam aboard the ship. He beams aboard the ship for an injury. It makes the transporter that kind of wonky. And when they beam around Captain Kirk, first he comes up. And right before a commercial break, the evil Captain Kirk comes out. He's not really evil, but he's the mere first where the sides of lust, passion, command, decision ability comes out right thereafter. And they're on already. That's actually one of the more interesting concepts, and I think, unlike the last several episodes that we've seen, this deals more with the duality of man. We're dealing with what actually makes one person a person. What makes Captain Kirk Captain Kirk? You've got the more reasoned, comfortable side that we all like to show our faces, our fellow man or fellow humans. And then you have the more passionate or angry side, if you will. The side that we turn to when we lose our thin veneer of civilization, we get angry. I thought that, you know, I could say it. I've met my own evil Matt Ross on occasion. I'm sure you've met your evil light Pontone on your own occasion. Did you like the way they handled it with the spinning of the transporter?
Yeah, I thought it was very good. A classic transporter problem that would come up a couple of different times. Echoes of future Star Trek. You've got, obviously, Thomas Riker being born out of a transporter error that no one even knew about him for 7 years. That cuck became a Maquis and then died like a cluck, but that's fine.
Well, you don't know if he's dead. He'll be in jail. I'm sure the Cardassians are treating him well.
Great. You get out of a 7-year-long isolated hellhole, and you decide to become a freedom fighter against the one race that, well, I guess I'd rather be in a Cardassian prison camp than like a Romulan prison camp.
That's true. That's the episode Second Chances in Star Trek The Next Generation. And then I forget the episode with, he was also in the Deus Nine episode, which was, I had to Google it. That was
obviously
Tuvix. Right, Tuvix, where Tuvix must die is my catchphrase. There's also in the animated series, which eventually we'll get to, they'll use the transporter to fix lots of things, but this is the very first thing, and something that you mentioned on their way to beaming up from Alpha 177, which apparently can go down to 120 degrees. You asked me, how come they just didn't use the shuttlecraft? Well, I joked with you that we were watching the episode, we had the shuttlecraft were getting detailed and washed, but in reality, we're in think of shuttlecraft, and also when they did figure that eventually it was a cost saving was to use a transporter, which is television effect, to build another set would have cost money, and you know, TV and spending money and that just don't go hand in hand, and Star Trek didn't have millions as it was.
You've obviously got a continuity problem there, as transporters weren't even around in Enterprise, the prequel.
Well, they had shuttlecraft, but the Enterprise didn't have it. So, you know, everyone said it was in a shuttlecraft, or, you know, they were putting the red stripes, the racing stripes on the side, or a starburst.
I mean, they could have come up with any sort of headcanon. Maybe the atmosphere of the planet would not allow for a shuttlecraft to go down. By the way, that dog is so cute. Can't believe they get freaking killed in it.
The horn dog?
Yes, the horn dog. Very, very beautiful, very obviously unhappy about being under the hot lights and wearing this stupid costume. But I gotta say, this is probably one of this is probably the first dog that I've seen in Star Trek since Porthos.
Yeah, this is, but this one's a space dog because it has a horn. Something also interesting is talking about costumes. If you think back to it, while they're on the planet, Shatner's command tunic does not have a command star. And in fact, when he beams up, he still doesn't have the star. I always thought there was an error in the show. Well, in a ring it is, but apparently there was something to do with the cleaning of the uniforms. They didn't have enough time to, I mean, cleaning in real life, not on the ship. They didn't have time to sew on the command star again. After I came back from the cleaners, when you know, on television, you got to get out those 26 episodes a season. You only got 6 days per episode. They don't have time to waste. So that's why it's not there. It is interesting.
What's the deal with Star Trek with Kirk garb? When he's on the bridge sometimes, he's wearing that more kind of casual, soft tunic. That's, I guess, when he's not in an away mission, right?
Well, no. He actually wears it on a rare missions. I think the green tunic, which I actually read, the green wraparound, it only worked three times in total. But I also remember from the color palette that the tunics only look yellow. They're actually supposed to be a slightly greenish, but they came across through the lighting on the TV as yellow. But the reason why they gave him the green one is to tear him apart from his evil counterpart. That was the main reason for doing it. I still think that despite that separation to try and prove how they're different, I still think it works pretty well. He comes back up to the ship, he changes, but those were his quitters, and he kind of passes out when he's like, then the man says, I worked on all this paperwork for you guys. Yeah, get out. But the other Kirk goes into sick bay and he asks for cereal. Brandy! Give me the brandy! I thought that was hilarious. The Shatner was able to show the two different sides of him, of himself.
Straight whiskey and violent lovemaking.
Well, hey, nothing wrong with that. It's probably
A lot wrong with that. What?
I was trying to ride.
Yeah, the whiskey. Okay. Well, cancel.
But that's interesting. You had asked me, why did McCoy have booze in the sick bay? Well, you know, it's always for medicinal purposes, as you would say, but he is the resident alcoholic. And then Doctor itself is iconic. That's Dickler's Tennessee Whiskey from the 60s. Now it's a collector's item. I myself have like a little tiny item version of it, like from a convention I bought. It was like $2. Not a glassware, like a siren piece of, like, I don't know, something. Plaster that looks like it. It's a Saurian brandy bottle. It's very iconic for Star Trek, and they use it all the way through. I think they used it on DS9 and TNG, and it comes from the Cheyennes, where we never see it, but where product is now real famous, even though it's just a redressed Acura whiskey bottle. I bet you were thinking like, oh man, I gotta get me some of that. You can buy Dickler's Tennessee Whiskey, it just will not be in that bottle.
I'm sure we can get an Etsy and find one of those bottles.
You can find those bottles. You can go to eBay. That's where they are. I think it's hilarious watching him ramp through the hallways, just drinking it. No one's bothering. Like, hey, Captain, I see him turning into an alcoholic freak for a ship of 430 personnel. I guess, let's stay out of the way of the captain. He's having a rough day. But then again, we come back to the rivalry between McCoy and Spock right thereafter. seems like the doctor's having fun with you, is what he says. Cooks at the comma cook or the safter cook says to Spock, but Spock says, you need something. What do you think is he at that kind of like the fact that, Kirk says that McQuarrie is picking on Spock all the time? You think McQuarrie hates Spock or he's just being like that, a jackass? What do you think?
No, I don't think that McQuarrie hates Spock. I think that McQuarrie didn't like Spock. He wouldn't talk to him. You know, ultimately, I think that he's a good old boy. He's a Southern Sawbones doctor, and he likes making a bit of fun with the resident nerd. I mean, also, Spock can take it, too. It's impressive. Imagine if you had someone who was a good friend who you could not hurt the feelings of, no matter what you did.
Yeah, you know, I like to say that about you, but, you know, I would never hurt your feelings. Mike, I love you.
No, of course.
You know, in a brotherly way. I actually did write that nominate and the Rook of the Moons that Spock has as an evening. And then we get into the fact that Mr. Battle Drinking Kirk goes into his yeoman's quarters.
Oh, yeah.
Drinking. This is where we start an attempted rape a couple of scenes later. You were saying like you were surprised that they would let that go on for so long.
I was about to say, why are they going to cut? Like, this is like 10 seconds too long here for modern network television. I mean,
you got to get tough up there, Bucko. As you were saying, no one says that anymore. So there you go. But, you know, that's kind of an interesting scene. I always said that, and I think it was again, the man said that Shatner actually slapped her at one point to get her into the character of like fear or something like that. It was actually an exercise, not abuse.
She was acting very well.
Yeah, it was really interesting. All right, fair forget. Lieutenant Uhura is technically in this episode.
You hear her voice.
And you hear her voice. Also, Eddie Paskey, who was later as Lieutenant Leslie, was in this as, I think it was his name was, Connors. You'll see him again. I'll play him out later. He's like the longest serving third party character, but then realize who the heck he is. He's also right out of the body that was William Shatner. Excuse me. The other one, I have to switch my man paper around there. Dan Etme, he's also a body rebel in there. That comes up later, but it's interesting that they got people that look at Shatner from the back mostly for like far scenes or from distant scenes.
I thought that the cinematography in this episode was excellent. There were some really good shots, like when they're looking for the double the warehouse space.
Yeah.
You know, the engineering section. Yes, the engineering session, which I have to say, actually, I always thought that it was very, the way J.J. Abrams shot the engineering was quite, you know, weird and not accurate. It's like, well, there's no rip clear here. What's going on? Why is it in this big brewery? But looking at the first episodes, I'm like, hey, it's much more tonally consistent with the first episodes of TOS, what he was doing there, you know, with all the pipes.
I think you're thinking back to the ending of the 2009 episode where there was acting step. Just that part is close to it, but they are walking past various things in the engineering deck. That's its actual upgrade in the motion picture where they change everything around and the Enterprise gets refitted and they have this long room where a huge engine core. But right now, you're just looking into a distance past like this aluminum nutting or leather, and you could see like giant tubes pointing up in various ways to try and, you're not sure if that's the impulse deck, or it's a fusion reactor, or that's the rip grip. It doubles as both. But yeah, that's where Kirk goes to hide. And in those scenes, you get to see the Babby double from behind. But you also mentioned that you thought it was pretty close. They were not exactly the same size.
I thought it was excellent. Yeah, the body double was a little bit buffer, but the way they shot it, where, you know, in shadows, far away, not bad at all. I was very impressed. And again, the cinematography was fantastic. Like, you know, the long shot, the shadows, it was so much more interestingly designed than, I'm always comparing it to the 90s stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was much better than a lot of the cinematography that you would see in TNG and DS9, and certainly Voyager. That show was so like a Pepsi commercial the entire time.
Hey, it was the 90s.
No, I mean, it's like, hey, the gritty, you know, the gritty, we're lost in the far reaches of space. That's what I always couldn't stand about Voyager. It's like, man, these people look like they're sweating at the least of any crew I've ever seen. They're all perfectly manicured all the time. But anyway, moving on.
Well, I mean, that's good music, too, as you were pointing out, that the music in this episode actually gave a good feeling for the scenes that they were in, the darkness, and also the melancholy nature of the Sapta Kirk realizing he can't, he's losing his ability to command. He's second-guessing himself, and also just sort of they're hunting down the darker Kirk about kind of, you got these violins in darker tones as they wrap around. It was very well done. The retro music was written by a guy named Sal Kaplan, which you actually hear throughout the rest of Star Trek itself. It's some really good stuff that he's done there. I think it actually really conveys the feeling of like a kind of a despair and sadness mm-hmm. for those characters, for the character of Kirk in the situation. What did you think of the music?
Thought it was fantastic. I liked how it didn't like not like that. Lots of nice little riffs on the main theme, going up to the more minor chords, putting it into a minor chord. Very doomsaying. By the way, just a little bit of criticism, I realized, like a couple of recent episodes, also The Naked Time.
Naked Time! Let's get some Naked Time, baby.
It was.
Yeah.
There's no explanation. Again, there's a conceit, and it's such a vague thing. It's like, the oar effed it up. I'm like, what, why, how, what happened?
Hey, I couldn't just take a vacuum cleaner, just kind of suck it out. Doesn't make sense. But, you know, it's sci-fi. That's the sci-fi concept. It happens. You know, you go into space, weird crap happens to you all the time. You have, again, your naked time or godlike powers because you got hit by a purple cloud, or you live on a planet with people you can't see or touch, you know? Well, you need salt suckers. Weird crap happens all the time, right? Well, that doesn't happen to you on your way to work? Come on.
It's a terrifying place. Yeah. So did you ever hear of the book Red Shirts by John Scalzi?
Actually, I have read Red Shirts by John Scalzi. I actually have it. It's sitting across from me. That's the kind of parody of a parody. There's actually a Star Trek story. I think it's close to In a Strange Land. It's not Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert A. Island. But Return to a Strange Land. There was two short stories written and it escapes my mind right now. I'm sure the few listeners that are listening will either comment or send in something, and please feel free to do that, everyone. To tell me which one that is, I do have that in a book, too, where the actors get switched and sent to the original series universe. So, kind of mirror-mirror, except it wasn't good versus evil, which we'll come to later, but actors replacing the stars that the actual characters, which is where Scalzi got his idea from, where the actual characters are then. You could also see that in kind of like Galaxy Quest, the unofficial Star Trek movie, or the Dark Mirror episode, the USS Callister, which is clearly a Star Trek episode. That was a great episode, man.
I can't stand the end that the end of like every Dark Mirror episode is someone, not every single one, but the majority of them end the same way. Someone is trapped in a hellish limbo as a result of modern technology that they can never escape. That, you know, it'll take their body, you know, a day to die, but their mind will live out eternities. But
yeah, I agree with you.
Which is just another reason why I refuse to get my brain uploaded if they do come out with some sort of life expanding technology where it's like, all right, we're going to put your brain into a computer. Are we just like you? I'm like, absolutely not, man. Like, I don't care. I'll just, whatever. We're all meant to die.
You're not going to like Prue Anderson teach you Elderwood then. Prue Anderson, the book there, where a lot of folks are fan. I found these something they call prayer fans that they could upload human consciousness into these things, like storage devices. That's actually not their primary purpose, but you'll have to read the book by Prue Anderson as a series. It's pretty good. I've seen the editor of that.
Prue Anderson also wrote on a pale horse, right?
Yes. He's written a whole range of things, you know.
But I like on a pale horse quite a bit. I can't believe that has not been made into a TV series or a movie yet.
Well, a lot of books are really difficult to convert. I mean, look at Dune. Look at all that stuff again. And we have
actually, I'm sure, three adaptations of Dune. And I actually would dare argue that.
Actually, there's four.
Oh, if you're talking about Jodorowsky, the movie?
Yeah, which was insane.
Jodorowsky's Dune is probably my second favorite documentary of all time.
That's some weird crap. I'll tell you that much. Your weirding there, man.
Well, it's just about fascination. This is a beautiful, beautiful piece of cinema. Inspires. You watch Jodorowsky's Dune, you want to go and write the novel you always thought about.
But that aside, we should probably circle back to the episode.
Yes, I got it. Yes, we clapped. We clapped when we heard him say it. Shout out to Rich Evans on that one. Yes, red shirts where they're like, hey, stay out of the narrative. You get close to this narrative, you're going to die. It's just,
that's true.
Try not to talk to anyone.
Is that a literary butterfly effect? Pretty.
Yes.
But that was actually, it's actually a pretty okay book, Red Shirts by Scorsese. Exactly. Get Hichi Rami Verrassi some Galaxy Quest, because we're going to be watching that one eventually as well.
I love that.
When they confront Kirk in the engine room, or evil Kirk confronts good Kirk, some of the things in there. Behind him is this weird screen that's actually a piece of the conference room from the second pilot.
Yes.
And Spock does something that starts the entire franchise on Twitter. He creates the Vulcan nerve pinch. And that's the first time it's used. He didn't want to punch somebody. He actually uses the Vulcan nerve pinch on Kirk. That's the first time it was ever used in Thabo. Because meanwhile, I thought Spock is an alien. He's, he's different. His ways are different than ours. So he came up with this kind of alien thing, which, first of all, there is a nerve in your neck that could actually hurt you pretty much. I don't know about knocking you out. I'm sure someone will say, yes, I can. But that was his creation. It was a pretty good thing. I mean, Nimoy came up with other things. We'll get to that as we go along. But that is actually one of the, that is the first thing. So we have no shuttlecraft, a Vulcan nerve pinch, and we got to do something after we've captured. By the way, something we do have to go back about. This also has one of the best Shatnerisms of all time. When the evil Kirk is in his quarters, he shouts, I am Captain Kirk. It's one of the most iconic and most memed things on the internet. If you look it up, you'll find hundreds of memes and screams. Hey, it might accidentally be in this podcast. Who knows? But what did you think of him like losing his cool as the evil Captain Kirk in his quarters?
I loved it. Thought he looked great doing it. I thought the cinematography was good. I realized I've never really seen Shatner as a villain. I don't, nothing comes to mind. So it was nice to see this kind of dark side of him. Yeah, he's a good actor. Again, it's all this crap where people claim that he's like one note or that he doesn't have range. Like, yeah, he doesn't have range in the way that like a method actor would have range, but he's an excellent character actor, which is he can convey a wide range of emotion while playing not too many different parts. You know, he's a Saturday matinee idol. He's a good-looking guy. He's a very good actor doing it.
Yeah, I also like the fact that, I think he also has, he does have portray that kind of stoic hero pretty well, I think, overall in the series. I mean, to get some vulnerabilities for a character, unlike in modern Trek, where no one has any vulnerabilities except Teal's for everything. He is actually probably one of the better, I find him, well, he was my first captain, so to speak, because he was the only game in town. But I will say that he's one of my favorite captains, actually. But I also think it's funny that in his quarters, he has heavy makeup for scratches that Janice Rand gave him while he was attempting to rape her.
Cell powder.
Yeah, sure it was. It was cover up by Maybelline. No, but it was pretty wild to see it. What are you having? Are you going to wrap a zits there, Cap? You know, or something. It was actually pretty neat. That was the only way you could differentiate them from that besides the green shirts.
It's kind of captain, by the way. Let's go quickly down. We filled out a little survey where we picked our own crew and ship. Mine was Sisko, as it would be my captain. Spock would be my first officer. Holographic Doctor would be my physician. His name is Joe, ultimately, right? That's what he chooses?
John? Who knows?
Okay.
The doctor. Spicer.
Yes. LaForge would be my engineer, because he's a dedicated nerd who doesn't do too much outside of just working on his engine all day long. My bridge crew auxiliary staff would be Odo, Odlith, smart guy, versatile, Jadzia, generations of experience, Quirk, good lateral thinking guy, sunny, probably make me a good drink and hook me up with some S-rated holodeck programs. Tuvok, just as it's always, I think, good to round out with another Vulcan, stronger and smarter than the average person. And Seven, I don't know.
I was going to say, I didn't know it was going to be a quiz on that, Mike, so I didn't actually write it down.
I've got yours.
Oh, well, then go ahead. Tell me what I said.
My ship would have been Voyager.
Okay.
It's smaller, more advanced, and can land.
As you secretly rep Janeway.
That's not true. Can't stand that voice. Matt
is... Come on. That's what pays on Norman.
Of course. Matt is Turk. Fuck. So we both have the same. Also the doctor. I didn't realize that we matched up this much. Scotty.
Yeah.
Then his auxiliary staff was Odo, Doda, Sulu, Chekhov. I don't know why you do Sulu and Chekhov. They're practically identical. Seven.
Almost.
And he would choose Enterprise E, which, what the hell?
Why not? It's got, it's got nice color tones and it can kick the ass of everything.
That's it. I don't know, man. Big, unruly little warship.
Hold on, let me just look at your mileage.
I guess. Let me just quickly say that in my brother's.
Sure.
Second. Oh, come on. Yeah, Joey, check this out. Pike, Ross, Bashir, Jordy, Data, Seven, Garrick, Odo, Quark, and he would do the Enterprise D. I pointed out that it would be a horrible idea to have Garrick on your ship, because he would have no secrets.
Well, but clearly he's not a true Star Trek fan, then. He's banned from the show. No, I'm kidding. He can come on any time.
Well, Joe's puts me to shame with his Star Trek knowledge. Anyway,
they figure out after realizing if they just, use some scratch tape, they fix the transfer. It takes a reach for the ionizer, which I guess, that's for your hair. They decide to do something where they craft circuit, blah, 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 blah. And they put the dogs, the horn dogs, the evil horn dog that barks at everyone, and the soft, sweet, sensitive dog who just sits there, and they put it all together. They beam it up, and it comes back dead, and we have another fist. We have a very thirst. He's dead, Jim. Then Dr. McCray. For the dab. For your horn grab, the dad. Damn it. We can't beam the people up. Meanwhile, they're freezing to death on the planet from using phasers to heat up rocks. And they're trying to build a shelter. There's no place for them to go. Things are breaking down. They're asking for cups of coffee and rope again. Shuttlecraft would have been a great idea. Oh, well. They even have a shutter bay, by the way, in the back episode, back of the ship. They just sort of get, let's just use the transporter. But
Sherman Morales.
Yeah, that's it. Sure. That's exactly it. Yeah, it had quantum tetra beams of something.
Correct.
But Burke Brad realizes, you know what? He's got to take himself back inside of me. There's a couple of RAID MP3 files of Kirk and Spock making love to each other that uses that phrase. And if you want, Well, there's a whole red. You don't know about KS stories?
I heard of them. Why are you listening to them, you freak?
I'm not a trick member, Brad, yet.
Oh,
I got lots of stress. Your dad was well ugly, but I does that as a WIM file. If any friend wants one, just shoot me an email eventually.
Oh, God, no.
I'm going to put this on Mike Steiner through his computer here, Revit. Then we eventually get to the point where we have evil Kirk duping good Kirk and trying to do the part where the bad guy is pretending to be the good guy. I mean, they have it out on the bridge, but Chris, I think again, Shatner doesn't go, I want to win. And he will, and they go back down to the transporter to reintegrate themselves. And does it work, Mike?
Can you believe it? It sure does. We don't end up with a psychopathic Kirk and wood Kirk.
You know, it's amazing that in the fifth episode of a 26 episode season or whatever, that the main character whose name is on the marquee is not going to not make it in this episode 5. Well, he does obviously make it. What did you actually think of the shooting of the devils on the bridge as compared to Asa on the transporter? Did you still find it mildly believable between the two?
A little worse. The hair is a little off. But, not bad at all.
Yeah, it's pretty much enjoyable, I think. And when we come to the ending of the episode, which is basically, you okay, Jim?
Yeah.
Beating those guys up. Hey, great, went back up. Yeah, just having a chance by Billy Fan. I just threw him in the oven for 375, 15 minutes. These guys will be fine. So, well, I'm down. And when we come to the cringiest part of the entire episode, which is what I pointed out.
Right. So Matt seems to think that Spock implies that Rad, I guess, wanted something naughty to happen. But my whole thing too is, as I'm reflecting on this, the whole point is that this is just letting out that the evil, quote unquote, evil Kirk.
That's true.
Well, no, it wasn't Kirk that didn't exist. It was just the part of him that was all id, right? I mean, Gene Roddenberry possibly was getting the pop science time.
I'm sure he's on a dead to blow.
Right. So the point being that obviously he was, the fact that he went after her in his unhinged state shows that he does have those feelings, that he does find her attractive, that he is attracted to her, and she is attracted to him. So now she knows that it's not just one-sided. He didn't go running to someone else's quarters. So, I think that was just kind of like her looking at it as a little encouraging to a crush, but a dark side of a, potentially violent situation.
Yeah, I always read it exactly as like Spock, kind of in a jokey way, which is not characteristic of the Redcon, saying like, there's some things you liked of that devil, Redcon. She gives him this kiss my ass look, which is pretty easy with those uniforms, but the things are gonna, how short they are. But I just think it's almost like, well, it's okay, Red. That's a true animal sled that you want, isn't it, lady? In the prior episode, The Nick of Time, there was a part where Kirk is actually pining the fact that he can't give himself over to Yeoman Lance and no beach to rock on, talking about a romantic time with his yeoman, because he's also attracted to her, and that was actually written into the script, but that actually goes nowhere for the series. It's not really a spoiler. We'll see that as it goes along, and Yana Rand isn't in the entire series. She does come, Grayson Whitney is actually fired later, but she is does come back in several other things. And like I said, I've met her. She was actually a pretty nice person when I met her, but no, I did not say, I'd like to walk on a beach with you. I think kind of it was implied that she liked the more forceful Kirk in some way. But I think when you take it with the scene together, it does kind of have an extreme negative reaction. It was to me anyway. It's like, yuck. That's kind of pretty sleazy there, Mrs. Spock. But that's just my opinion. So overall, that's pretty much where the episode ends. And we go ahead, to our next little adventure. What do you think of this episode overall? Would you recommend watching it for a Star Trek movie, or what would you say?
Yes, 100%. This is probably the best original series episode I've seen so far. I give it a 9 out of 10.
Excellent. I also give it a 9 out of 10. So, we'll have to keep track of whatever our numbers. We had a lot of sevens, but 9 out of 10 for me as well. What's your WTF moment for this? Because if you can't tell, that is my WTF moment response. Is you like the animalistic bird? That's for me. It was like, really? But what was yours? Did you have one? Or were you too enamored with the dog?
The dog. Seeing the dog in the beginning. That was pretty out of left field, man. What did you do to this poor dog?
You're not going to get her for your dad, cannoli? You're not going to get one? You're going to get an outfit like that?
No, of course not.
I think between your two dogs, I think you had both of those dogs. The evil, vicious dog that tries to kill everybody, and your sweet, soft dog. You know, they're two different animals. One being your wife, so you're 3 years.
Gotta say.
Yeah.
But
I think Kanella can wear that uniform, too. Kanella's a, what is she, a Shih Tzu?
Shih Tzu mixed with a Pomeranian.
And your demon dog is what?
Zoe's a very sweet dog. She's a hound, Basset, mixed a little with a husky and something else.
Yeah, some bourbon, I think.
Okay. She's so sweet. She lets me pick her up now. She's really, really sweet pie.
And he only has 8 fingers left, folks, so finally played off. Good job. So that was our episode. Anything else you'd like to mention or talk about?
It's getting better. I can't wait to see where it goes. It seems like it's pretty astonishing that after only 5 episodes, it's really hit its stride. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing that the first episode, the first season was so fantastic. But when you look at other sci-fi shows, not just Trek, it usually takes a season or two or three to get its feelings, and sometimes newer cities and some newer cities don't catch its stride at all. But our next episode's coming up, and we'll try and get it up next week, we promise, barring any weirdness.
No, it's not me, and I'm much more free this weekend.
I really remember that. We're going to try and get this out next week, but the next episode is Mud's Women, which is the episode of Space Wives, Red Rose, depending on your point of view.
Hey,
you don't see it. I ain't doing that. But that's basically it. So, whoever enjoyed our episode of Whether Your Guess Is a Novel, Mike, you want to send us out again? That's DF guy.
Yes.
Right. Thank you again for joining us at Rolling with Cassius Anomalies, and we'll see you on the next round. Live long and prosper, Mike.
Love you, Matt. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.